We are I. Good morning, everybody. 4:44 a.m. on this beautiful Wednesday morning. And I say beautiful because it's nice and crisp and cool. And last night I had my window propped wide open and like just the sheets were cold, the pillows were cold, and you had to really nestle yourself into those blankets to be able to get warm. And I love that. I love it. It's only a matter of time before the bed heats up a little bit from your body. And I sleep like super hot anyway. I'm a furnace all night long. And it was nice. It leads to a beautiful morning. Puts a smile on my face. And I have a smile on my face right now as I'm recording this. But the one thing that I find interesting that I have been doing a little bit of research on the last few weeks, because I've known this to be a trend because, you know, of what happened to my family farm in southern Alberta, but what happened to a lot of other, you know, family farms, you know, in that area and a lot of other areas around here. Now, if you want to speed up to what's happening right now, a place where I live, there's a lot of small family hobby farms. And this is where, you know, people just want to raise some chickens to be able to have some eggs, or maybe it's a little bit of supplementary to their income, because if they have chickens, not only do they can eat eggs and, you know, they can sell some eggs, you know, but helps reduce their property taxes. They want to live on a little bit bigger space. Maybe they have a horse or two, you know, maybe they grow, they want to have a nice big garden where they can grow, you know, more food. But the problem with this is a lot of these family farms aren't actually on agricultural land. And right now, a lot of these, you know, little hobby farms that are 5 acres, 8 acres, or, you know, they're being sold to developers and, you know, the wheel of development turns, which I'm not against. Like, don't get me wrong, I'm not against development at all. It's just sad to see the impact of what that has. But when you look geographically across the nation, the impact that that has is actually very small. We just feel the impact in our area in a great way because it's changing our municipalities. But again, when you look at Canada and the development that happens, there's actually extremely minimal amount of like impact that this actually has. One of the problems is that not all land in Canada is hospitable. Not all land in Canada has fertile farmland. And not all land in Canada is desirable to want to live just because of geographical space. So some of these double-edged swords are quite sharp. But nonetheless, we actually see a fall of the family farms because, you know, these also 5 to 8 acre parcels and, you know, more desirable development land, you know, they're getting like $1 million an acre. You know, even like 500,000 an acre, and like what child is going to be able to afford that these days walking into a mortgage where, you know, even if you put, you know, 30% down, you're still staring down the barrel of a $25,000 a month mortgage payment without any maintenance costs. So when you look at that, that's pretty steep. Now you couple this is what would happen with my family farm is you have commodity prices drop. So this is the part of wars that most people don't understand when, for example, what's happening when we put sanctions on a place like Russia, or when Canada, you know, under Justin Trudeau's dad, the fucking, oh, don't even get me started there, put sanctions on China that they couldn't buy our commodities, like canola, like wheat, like barley, flax, all these things that we grew in southern Alberta, and especially more specifically on our family farm. So what happens there is it drops commodity prices because the demand goes way down because there's also not these new customers. So there's an abundance on the market. So then, you know, people, they start selling it at more of a discount, which hurts the farm because, again, we're looking at stabilized pricing. Take a little bit less, but stabilized pricing. Then Saudi Arabia comes around and says, well, you can't sell to China, but you can sell to me and I can sell to China. Great. And this is the way that things are always done all around the world, is these trade embargoes, they only create a middleman. So this is tough. So now they have pricing power. So I will buy everything you have, but I want it for X price. And you can't sell it anyway, so you might as well sell it to me for this discounted price. Well, it crashes the commodity prices. And this is where a lot of family farms in southern Alberta and Saskatchewan, they really had to, you know, decide whether or not that they can take out second mortgages or third mortgages or take money out of savings if they had it, or they had to sell, which is kind of like where we ended up. Not saying that we couldn't have survived the storm, but like that looked pretty bad. So we had to sell. Now in Alberta, specifically in the Prairie provinces, you know, I don't know if everybody knows what Hutterite is. They're German communities, but they're cities that are for Hutterites only. And they gobble up farmland, thousands and thousands and thousands of acres, because they have the workers to be able to do so. Because they have these little cities that pop up all over the prairies to be able to keep everything in-house. Clothes, food production, water production, everything. Like literally everything, you know, stays inside that ecosystem. So you're competing against that in Prairie provinces to be able to keep farmland. You know, and now you're competing against, you know, big corporate farms, which I'm not against either one of these things, but it makes it very hard because they may need loss. They may acquire land specifically for the loss for tax purposes. They may want to buy some land under a different business name to have that as a failing business, because then they can shuffle money around and kind of balance and equal things out tax-wise, which, you know, a small family farm can't do. They don't have an opportunity to be able to do that. They're scraping by as is, most likely, most of the time. Now, where this brings us to date is, you know, like we have about 80% of our family farms that from 1900, like 1900 to date, about 80% of the family farms in Canada are gone. Like, think of that number, because that number is so vast. And I couldn't find an actual number that they referenced. And I'm sure if I dug hard enough, I could find it. Of say, if for an easy math, because these numbers are very, very large. Like, remember, we're not talking, you know, small numbers here. So let's just use a number of 1,000. Well, 1,000 down to 200 is a huge number. But if you go from 10,000 to 2,000, that is massive. If you go 100,000 down to 20,000, then get 80,000 family farms gone. Because the actual number that we're talking about is in the millions of families of farms that are gone. Like, isn't that wild? Like, when you think of that. Millions of family farms vanished. Now, you want to say, well, why is this? And it's just like, well, one of the major reasons is what I just stated, which is interesting because they don't talk about those things at all. They talk about like these three kind of key drivers. One was the depression in the dirty 30s. Sure, absolutely. That's kind of another way to be able to explain what I'm talking about now, but it's a little bit more of an in-house problem versus like, you know, international geopolitics. And another one was, you know, World War II. You know, when a lot of those sons went off to fight, a lot of those fathers went off to fight, and everybody else was kind of contributing in a different way to be able to support the war machine. You know, so we have like a few kind of key factors like this. And then, you know, really, you kind of see this turn of then people, we get into a little bit more of a technological and digital age where, you know, kind of maybe in like that early 90s. You know, when you kind of look at that early 90s, you know, where even more people, you know, fled the family farm because they're just like, you know, I want to be a part of these big urban centers. You know, and how and why not? You know, when you look at what's the one thing that you always heard young people say, it's just like, oh, I want to have the opportunity of the big city. And it's just like, well, fair enough. But what about the opportunity of the farm? Farm brings a lot of opportunity to you. And we're starting to know that now. That's why a lot of people are going back into homesteading and getting back onto these smaller, you know, kind of family farms and raising their own food. You know, so they talk about these things kind of very obscurely, the 1920s and 30s, you know, the depression, the dirty 30s, you know, into, you know, the World War II, then kind of like the 70s and 80s, you know, like that starting to get into global financial instability and, you know, the restructuring of international oil and gas, decolonization, inflation, you know, all of these kind of things. But they don't talk about, and I guess they do in a proxy way, they talk about how a lot of these trade embargoes and a lot of these, you know, policies they're made that were supposed to affect other countries but affected ours. You know, and where we're getting to now, what's going to kill a lot of family farms is this bullshit carbon tax, the restrictions that are put on farming when it comes to using fertilizers, and how farmers can be able to operate their businesses. That's going to be the next. That's going to drive out a lot of, you know, family farms. And you see this by all these major corporations and people like Bill Gates and the family that owns Walmart, where they buy farms by the tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of acres. Here in BC, one of the Walmart family members owns the biggest ranch in Canada. That's up by Merritt, BC, in between the coast and the Okanagan Valley. Douglas Lake Ranch. It is insane. This farm is insane. It has its own landing strip, own mini airport, aerodrome. That's how big this fucking farm is. It's insane. Absolutely insane. So I guess my question for the day is, when you force people into urban centers, you actually really drive politics in a major way, because a lot of conservatives, a lot of Republicans, you know, a lot of reasonable people come from the country, rural settings. So the more that you force these people into, you know, major urban centers, you can see how that shapes things right down to how people vote, which is extremely interesting. So I guess my question of the day is, what do you think happens long term by the destruction of the amount of the family farms? Again, we're already at like 80%, and that's only accelerating, because as many people might be homesteading now and turning to that lifestyle, it's because of the cost to be able to start that family farm now is what deters most people.